Radio Prague News.
Advocate General of the European Court of Justice has recommended dismissing a lawsuit filed by the Czech Republic against the EU directive restricting possession of firearms. Czech billionaire Radovan Vítek is being sued for allegedly defrauding a New York hedge fund and a Czech investment firm of more than $1 billion. And the opposition Pirate Party has called on the European Commission to release an audit of Prime Minister Andrej Babiš's alleged conflict of interest regarding EU subsidies to the holding Agrofert. Advocate General Eleanor Sharpston of the Court of Justice of the European Union has recommended dismissing a lawsuit filed by the Czech Republic against the EU directive restricting possession of firearms, the court's press department said on Thursday. The Czech Republic filed the complaint in 2017, arguing that the set of restrictions damages responsible arms holders and puts more guns on the black market. Mrs. Sharpston said the new EU directive didn't infringe on the right to property, adding that EU legislation did not guarantee any fundamental right to gun ownership. The recommendation of the Advocate General is not legally binding, but it is usually taken into account. Czech billionaire Radovan Vítek is being sued for allegedly defrauding a New York hedge fund and a Czech investment firm of more than $1 billion, Bloomberg News reports. Kingstown Capital Management LP and Invest Hold Limited filed a lawsuit against the Czech real estate mogul in a Manhattan federal court on Wednesday, accusing him of engaging in a racketeering scheme spanning a decade. They claim Vítek used a web of shell companies and straw owners to gain control of a Luxembourg-based real estate development company in which Kingstown Capital held a substantial interest. He then sold the most valuable asset at a distressed prices to entities he secretly controlled, the lawsuit alleges. The opposition Pirate Party has called on the European Commission to release an audit of Prime Minister Andrej Babiš's alleged conflict of interest regarding EU subsidies to the holding Agrofert. European Commissioner for Budget and Human Resources Günther Oettinger is due to unveil preliminary results of the audit to the European Budget Control Committee in a closed meeting. Party chairman Ivan Bartoš said the Pirates have called on the European Commission to publish findings arising from an audit conducted at Czech ministries regarding EU subsidies for Agrofert, amounting to some 2 billion crowns. If Brussels does not do so, the opposition party will seek a debate in the lower house of parliament next week on the affair and send an official request to the European Commission. Babiš has placed Agrofert into a trust, but Transparency International says he remains the beneficial owner. Czech President Miloš Zeman has signed into law new privacy protection rules following up the EU's General Data Protection Regulation and a series of some 40 related amendments. The lower house of parliament passed the rules again in mid-March, accepting the Senate's objections to sanctions that regions and municipalities would face for violations. These were deleted from the final version. MPs originally wanted to lower the maximum fine for small municipalities to 15,000 crowns. In general, the Office for the Personal Data Protection can impose a fine of up to 10 million crowns for violating privacy protection rules. Czech carmaker Škoda Auto sold 307,600 cars in the first quarter of 2019, which is 2.9% less than in the same period last year. The drop in sales is mainly caused by a decline in demand on the Chinese market. At the same time, the company increased its global market share by 3.3% over the same period, recording particularly strong growth in Western Europe and Russia. Škoda expects to increase sales again with its latest model Scala, ready to hit the market later this month. The Czech Republic is lagging behind the rest of the European Union when it comes to household internet access, suggests a study carried out by Cevro Institute. Some 80.5% of Czech households are currently connected to the internet, while the European Union average is 87%. In terms of optical internet speed, the Czech Republic occupies 49th spot on the world ladder. In 40% of cases, the speed of household internet is lower than 30 megabit per second. According to the study, only 14% of Czech households use internet with a speed of over 100 megabit per second. And finally, a quick look at the weather. Friday is expected to be overcast with a slight chance of rain and snow showers in higher elevations. Daytime highs will be ranging between 6 and 10 degrees Celsius. I'm Ruth Franková, and that's the end of the news.
Hello and welcome to Radio Prague, the international service of Czech Radio. Coming up in today's programme, we speak to political analyst Jiří Behe about the government's recent cabinet reshuffle. Prague has hosted the European leg of the Startup World Cup, with a Czech team taking the top prize. And later, we speak to pianist Thomas Zaruba, whose first album is currently hot stuff in Paris. All that coming up, so please stay with us. Prime Minister Andrej Babiš on Wednesday announced the details of a planned cabinet reshuffle. Trade and Industry Minister Marta Novákova will be leaving her post at the end of the month, together with Transport Minister Dan Ťok, who is leaving office at his own request following fierce criticism from opposition deputies. Daniela Lazarová asked political analyst Jiří Behe about the timing of the reshuffle and the reasons behind it.
Two reasons. One is, of course, to make a change and give some new energy to the ANO movement before the European elections. And the second reason is that the two ministers who were replaced have not had good results. Mr. Ťok has been surrounded by scandals concerning the construction or reconstruction of the D1 highway. Mrs. Novákova has made some very unfortunate statements recently. And I think that all of that is not really good for a movement whose main slogan was competency and asserting that traditional politicians are not good, whereas experts that Mr. Babiš will find will manage things much better.
Well, Marta Novákova is clearly not a politician, and the Prime Minister does tend to choose managers rather than politicians for ministerial posts. Has this practice backfired in her case?
I think this practice has backfired in both cases, because Mr. Ťok could also not be considered entirely a politician. He came from a construction firm. He never was an important player in the ANO movement. And in the end, I think he paid a price for getting into a conflict with the most prominent politician next to Mr. Babiš in the ANO movement, and that is Mr. Faltýnek, who is not an expert in the true sense of the word, but certainly plays a very important political role. And I think that in the end, when there was a conflict between the two, Mr. Faltýnek prevailed. And Mrs. Novákova is not a politician at all, so I think some of her statements were a reflection of that. She simply has not handled some sensitive issues the way she should, and an experienced politician would probably not make those mistakes.
There have been quite a few changes in the Babiš administration, and the Prime Minister's critics say he is running out of candidates. Do you agree with that?
Well, I think that for any self-respecting expert, it will be very difficult to join Mr. Babiš's cabinet in the future, because quite frankly, it is not entirely clear what criteria Mr. Babiš uses. It seems to me that if you take the example of what looked like a conflict between Mr. Ťok and Mr. Faltýnek, in the end, it wasn't Mr. Ťok who was supposed to be the expert that Mr. Babiš wanted to rely on, but it was Mr. Faltýnek who is just a political player who prevailed. So this may happen again, that the people who would go into or join Mr. Babiš's government as experts may find out very quickly that in confrontation with politicians who surround Mr. Babiš, they stand no chance, and that they will be under a lot of different kinds of pressure.
The Prime Minister was asked whether this was the last cabinet reshuffle, and he said that might not be the case. Do you think that there are others who may be?
Yes, I think that Mr. Babiš certainly watches his ministers through a prism of the public acceptance, so to speak, and when he sees that a minister is not very visible and doesn't score points for honor with the public, he is thinking or starts thinking that maybe he should replace such a minister. And I think the next candidate for a change is Mr. Kněžínek, who is the Minister of Justice, and certainly in comparison with a very, very visible and prominent predecessor, Mr. Pelikán, of course, he seems rather invisible and without making any real impact. So I think that he may be next candidate.
Why was it not done now? Many people expected a broader reshuffle.
Yes, I think that Mr. Babiš wants to make incremental changes simply because he doesn't want to look like someone who put together a government of full of people who are incompetent or not meeting his criteria. So obviously it would not be in his interest to replace half of the government because it could backfire. So I think that he's going to make small changes one after the other. And, you know, people have short memory and they don't remember that actually four or five ministers in his government have already been replaced.
And that was political scientist Jiří Behe speaking to Daniela Lazarová in that report. Prague this week, for the first time, hosted the European leg of the Startup World Cup and Summit, an annual event drawing hundreds of hopefuls and thousands of prospective investors. A Czech startup took the regional prize but lost out to a Swedish one for the continental prize and $500,000 in seed money. Brian Kennedy has more.
Around 350 startups from more than 50 countries took part in the event. A dozen startups, including three local contenders, were in the running for the European Prize awarded on Wednesday at Prague's Congress Hall. Mimbly, a Swedish startup focusing on economical household water use, won the European final and a cash prize of $500,000. Founder Isabella Palmgren explained the scope of the problem that her innovation tries to address.
Everyone in here uses laundry machines to wash your clothes. These obviously use water, but what you might not know is that they actually account for 25% of the average water in a household. All of this warm water is then released into the sewer full of microplastics. This is an add-on water recycling system for laundry machines. It works with any type of brand or any type of size. It recycles up to 90% of the water. We capture all of these microplastics, and we save over 30% of the energy.
Mimbly edged out Czech startup Motion Lab, a low-cost platform for creating thousands of personalized videos and ads, to win the European final. But both get to compete in the grand finale round of the Startup World Cup and Summit in San Francisco on May the 17th, where the prize money is $1 million in seed money. The European leg of the contest was co-organized by UP21, a Prague-based group that mentors innovators and entrepreneurs and provides them seed money. UP21 partner Vitek Schubert says the green aspect of Mimbly tipped the scales in favor of the Swedes.
It was a very difficult decision, very difficult. We had two favorites. In the end, we chose Mimbly because it had that ecological aspect. Its innovation not only saves and recycles the water that households use in washing machines and filters microplastics, but also saves drinking water. In the end, that decided it.
Microplastics are unhealthy for animals to ingest, causing physical and metabolic damage to all manner of sea creature, from the tiny plankton up to the giant whale. Apart from the Czech startup Motion Lab, which was founded in Brno and already has started its U.S. expansion, among the finalists was Amadix, a personalized diagnostic tool for managing cancer developed in Spain, and MyBuddy, a voice training program from Russia.
And that was Brian Kennedy ending that report. Just a reminder that you are listening to Radio Prague, the international service of Czech radio, where it's now time for our main feature of the day. In this week's Panorama, Daniela Lazarová speaks to pianist Tomáš Zaruba about his album Slow Down, which is currently the bestseller in Paris.
Thomas Zaruba, author of the best-selling jazz album Slow Down, is a pianist of Australian, Canadian, Czech origin living in France. Although he was born into a cosmopolitan family of musicians and started playing the piano at the age of two, he opted for a career in advertising, and it was a tragic incident that made him turn his life around and devote himself exclusively to music. When Thomas visited Radio Prague this week, I asked him what had prompted him to drop everything and pursue his life's passion.
It's the Bataclan attacks in Paris. That was a real shock for me. I was supposed to be in one of the restaurants where there was one of the shootings. And by chance, I was in Vienna trying some pianos. And then, in the middle of the night, everybody was texting me, sending messages via social networks and stuff. Are you okay? Are you okay? Because I live in the 11th arrondissement in Paris, and that's where the shooting occurred.
And what happened?
That had a great impact on my way of seeing life. There's a famous newspaper called Le Monde in France, and they had a portrait of each of the victims that died, and I couldn't see myself named there with my age and my profession working in advertising. I said, no, if I die, I should die as a pianist. And that's how I started, to put things together and to record my first album in Czech Republic.
When you compose, you're a composer as well. When you compose, where do you seek inspiration?
It's in everyday life, basically. It just comes.
Are we talking about people's emotions, or are we talking about the environment? Is it a city that inspires you, or a mood?
It's cities, people, countryside a lot. The countryside is even better. The south of France, for example, or Prague. Prague is great inspiration. And the great inspiration I got in a forest just out of Prague, in a little city called Unhošť, where I recorded the album at Sono Records, Sono Studio. And that's the perfect combination, to be in a studio close to a forest with no network for your telephone and just focus on what you're going to do.
Your best-selling album is titled Slow Down, right?
Correct.
And I believe it's the best-selling jazz album in France now. That's amazing. Where did you get inspiration for that? And why is it called Slow Down?
So I was working in a fast-paced environment, you know, hotels, taxis, air conditioning, planes, moving from a city to another for business. And also working in digital advertising was working with robots that operate buying and selling of digital space on the computers in less than 100 milliseconds. And when our eyes open and close, that's 200 milliseconds. So it's twice as fast. It's amazing. And I was also very impacted by the way we live today. I mean, we have so much technology, there's so much music everywhere. You just step into a shop, there's music. And it's very, very hard to find a place where there's no noise, just silence.
And where did the inspiration for Slow Down come from then?
It just appeared like that in the morning, it's a Slow Down. That's the title. It just appeared just in the morning. And I didn't know what I was going to play. I had some ideas somewhere in my head, but it was impossible for me to write it down with a pen. And what happened is, because I'm a painter also, so I painted the cover of the album, and I knew that was going to be the inspiration for the music. So I had the title, the cover, and then I went to the studio, and the first day was terrible. I was playing, and listening to what I play, I didn't like it at all. It was terrible. And so we had dinner there with the sound engineer, a couple beers, and at 2 a.m., the sound engineer says, I can't sleep at night. I've got insomnia. So if you want, we could maybe try and record something in the middle of the night. And it just came, boom, like that, everything.
Was that your first album then? Was that
correct?
Your first?
Right, yeah.
And a huge success immediately. You travel a great deal. Do cities and places you visit, do they have moods?
Oh, sure. They all have their own energy. They all have their own smell. They all have a different pace also. And
are you able to capture that in your music if you create, if you compose there?
Sure.
Does that happen?
Yeah, absolutely. But like a city like New York, where I lived for 2 years, I could not write anything that goes with New York. Not today, because I'm more in a laid-back position right now, slowed-down mood, something very emotional, not about the technique that you can find in some pianists all over the world. They're just, you know, good surgeons. They just bing, 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 bing. It's perfect. There's nothing. But there's, in my opinion, close to zero emotion. Because you cannot play Rachmaninoff if you don't know his life. You need to read and to understand how this was composed and what was his mental state at that time, for example. And then you can get into, you know, his emotions and give the emotion while playing.
What about Prague? A lot of people say they come to Prague because they like the slow pace of the city. Is it a place to slow down? What kind of mood, what kind of energy do you see now?
Well, as I'm living in Paris, it's funny, let's take it like that. Living in New York, when I got back to Paris, it took me 6 months to just get down to the Parisian rhythm. And now I find when I go to Prague, I find that Paris is too fast-paced.
You composed a piece called 1968-2018, is that right? And performed it, I think, in Paris.
Yeah.
Its premiere was in Paris. Are you influenced by political developments? Obviously, 1968 means a great deal to any Czech the minute you say that. And was it composed for a special occasion?
Absolutely. It was in 2017. I was having lunch with His Excellency, the Czech Ambassador, Petr Drulák. And he said 2018 is going to be a big year for us because it's the 100-year anniversary of the foundation of Czechoslovakia in Paris, where the actual Czech center is, in Saint-Germain-des-Prés. And there's also the 50-year anniversary of 68, the Prague Spring, and the 25 years of the separation between Czechs and Slovaks. And he said, I would like you to choose one of these subjects and write something. And I accepted immediately. And
What's in it?
So I took 68, but not only Prague. I tried to bridge it with Paris because we also had big revolution in 68, May 68. It was a big movement coming from the youth. And so I tried to describe the before 68, the 68, and after.
How do you feel about vinyl records?
For me, it was not even a question. I had to produce a vinyl because there's the physical approach. I mean, the studio I recorded at has the best microphones I've ever seen in the world, the best technique, the best everything, basically. I mean, David Bowie was recording his albums there, Tata Boys. I mean, a lot of people know this studio because of its quality. And I said, I can't just put my music online because it's compressed. And you will not, the people will not be able to hear the depth and the 8 or 9 microphones in this great studio. So I directly went to vinyl, and when I was looking in Paris where to produce, again, it got me back to Czech Republic, because there's the biggest and oldest factory in the world in Loděnice, close to Beroun, and they produce, I think, something like 60,000 a day in low season. And for me, it's the physical approach, meaning it's, you can see how it works. You can hear the sound. It's physical. It's like that. It's perfect.
So there's a special magic to them, even in listening to music.
Well, it's a ritual. It's not like listening to music on your telephone or in your with the earphones. It's like you're choosing a moment to enjoy music and sit down, maybe have a glass of something or do nothing and close your eyes and just travel without moving. And vinyl has this little magical crack that makes it really authentic and deep. And as the cover of the album is in kind of orange yellow tones, I chose to press the vinyl. I didn't want it to be black, so it's a special edition, and it's see-through blue vinyl.
You're an ambassador for Petrov Pianos in Paris. How did that come about?
That's really funny. Because in the studio, I recorded on an old Steinway C, which is a great model. And this one was from 1907. Beautiful, beautiful instrument in beautiful mint condition. And naturally, at one point, I just went to Steinway.com, contacted Hamburg, spoke my best German, and asked how is it possible to become a Steinway artist. And they never replied. I called, I emailed, they never, never replied. I was like, this is really disrespectful. And I was on a famous TV show in France, and someone saw this show, sent me an email, and he's a piano dealer in the east of France and Luxembourg, Piano Schaeffer, and he said, well, I'm working with Petrov, you should maybe talk to these guys. And that's also something that I really believe in, is that when something doesn't happen, it's for a reason. And there's always something better that's going to happen. So, and that's the story, because I met with Anna and Adam at the Petrov factory and tried the great pianos they have, the Ant Petrov, which is like a real luxury product. And they decided to offer me this position and to be part of the Petrov art family. And there are only 15 people in the world that have this status. So it's great.
What are your plans for the future? Is there a mood or an event that you'd like to capture and haven't done so yet?
I'm working on a play where the piano will be in the center, and something a bit with humor and piano playing. Because on January 31st, I gave a concert and debate at the Czech Center in Paris, and the director, Jiří Hlinica, said, well, it was great, you should maybe work on something like a play, because this was only improvisation. And the people in the audience were really glad to be here. It was not just a concert where you sit down and receive the music. It was interactive. And that has a lot of meaning, I think, for everyone today, because we have all these telephones connections, but how many people do we really see and do we really get in touch with physically? And that's less and less, I think.
So it's a better feeling for you than actually having an audience that is silent.
Exactly. Because they can react and ask questions. And I think it's always great to be able to speak with an artist, even for the artist, because that's the best feedback is from them. Once I did the album, it's done. But what I love is to get the feedback, like from mothers that make their babies go to sleep with my music, from an Alzheimer's center in Geneva, where they see great progress on the people that are affected by this neurological disease. Even psychotherapists asked me authorization to use my music with their clients. So I love to get this great feedback from the people.
When you made the decision to leave advertising and turn your life around and basically devote yourself to music alone, how rewarding has it been? Are you glad you'd made that decision? And what has it brought to you? How has it changed your life? Has it changed you in any way?
Well, I'd say I always had the music inside myself. I always played music. Even in New York, for example, I was working in banking, and in the evening I went to these great hotels where they have grand pianos. And so I've always played, but it's now that I only play piano, and that's it. And that's really rewarding in the way that all the people that send me messages about how they feel about my music, how they use my music, like architects design houses while listening to my music, some write books. And that's thanks to the internet. I mean, it's really amazing, and I was really shocked in a good way how people use my music and what they use it for. I could have never ever imagined that when I was composing and recording the album. So I'm blessed for that.
Right, Mr. Zanobel, thank you very much for your time. Thank you for speaking to us.
and that was pianist Tomas Zaruba, whose composition is currently playing in the background. But that is all for now from me, Tom McEncrow. Thank you very much for joining us, and goodbye.